The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
All right, we are doing chapter 10. Actually, it was in chapter 7 that King Solomon praises wisdom. In chapter 8 and 9, King Solomon points out and cautions us regarding the limitations of wisdom, and that there's a place where wisdom cannot take you, where faith must be maintained, and that one is encouraged to explore, to probe with the utmost of logic and intellect, to understand God, to understand the ways of God, to understand the Torah, to understand life. But you always have to remember that sometimes you'll simply draw a blank, right? And at that moment, you have to remember that there is a commitment and I have to go on. All right? Now in chapter 10, which we're about to start, King Solomon's theme is comparing the fool to the wise person. You know, and in terms of his method, not only is his message moderation and balance, but the way he presents his message is so full of moderation and balance. He'll say one idea, he'll then counteract that and balance that out, and then he'll balance this out. And so he praises wisdom, then he points out the drawbacks and the limitations of wisdom, and yet he goes on and then praises wisdom again, in contrast to, of course, the serious downfalls of folly and foolishness. And therefore one should know the difference between simple faith and foolishness, wisdom, and yet the limitations of wisdom. And this is the brilliance of King Solomon, who embodies the brilliance of Torah. So, starts off with a fantastic introduction. Dead flies, zivuvei mavit, yavish yabia shemen rokeach. Dead flies will cause the ointment of the perfumer to rot. Right? Dead flies. Okay? Yakar mechachma mechavod, one who is honorable or who is valuable because of their wisdom and their honor, a little foolishness. In other words, a little foolishness to the one who is truly valuable because of their wisdom and honor, that little foolishness will cause them to rot like little flies in the ointment. Okay? Now, he must be referring to some kind of scientific phenomenon in his day, which I'm not familiar with. But the commentaries point out like this, that you could have a very expensive oil, you know, which of course these oils were perfume, they were for fragrance. And all of a sudden, this little itsy bitsy teeny weeny insect dies and happens to fall into it. So you would say, oh, you know, it's a big deal. You know, no problem. It's compared quantitatively to the whole thing, it'll be nullified, right? It's just a little insect. And yet that little insect, apparently, it was known to those who made these very fine oils, very expensive oils, that little insect could cause the entire brew to spoil. So too he warns us. Yes, I praise wisdom. I want to warn you, though, that a little foolishness, just a little itsy-bitsy foolishness, could cause your entire wisdom to go bad. That's how he starts off his chapter 10, which warns us against foolishness. And he's telling us that foolishness and, you know, frivolity, lightheadedness, all that kind of stuff could lead you to regret, because one stupid mistake could bring the whole thing down. And so he's telling us that wisdom isn't something that you can simply rely on and say, well, gee, I got a lot of it, so I don't have to be on guard. But you want to make sure that a little itsy-bitsy fly doesn't fall into it. Okay? Very strong. Lev chacham liyamino. The heart of the wise is to his right. Velev katzil, but the heart of the fool is to his left. And of course, what is the symbol of our right hand? Our right hand symbolizes activity. It's our active hand. It's our initiating hand. Okay, I mean, even in Judaism, halakhically, if you're left-handed, that's basically called your right hand. Okay? Because your right hand is considered to be the one that is active, that you use, that is ready to do. Your left hand is more your lazy hand. Okay? Kind of sits back and waits. You kind of throw with your right, catch with your left. Alright? So therefore, the heart of the wise is to his right. How do you know a person is wise? If their heart is to their right, which means these are people who are ready to do. Alright? And so therefore he gives us a definition of the wise in contrast to the fool. Wise people are doers. Okay? Now isn't that an interesting symbol? Because often people have a symbol of the wise person who kind of sits, perhaps cross-legged, somewhere removed from the hustle and bustle and the activities of this world, and can tell you various brilliant, you know, insights about life. Okay? King Solomon says, the wise people are people who are always ready to do. Okay? And the fools are passive people. So if you meet a person who on one hand seems to be saying a lot of very interesting things, but ultimately are lazy and passive and don't do anything, are not ready to do something, then that is an indication that they're really not truly wise. This is, by the way, a very important idea in Judaism. In Judaism, by definition, a Talmid Chacham, a wise person, is a tzaddik, is a righteous person. That's bottom line, okay? I think we once mentioned this, that I believe it was in the Greek world, that they believed that it was possible for there to be a distinction, between the sage and the righteous. Okay? And that it's very possible for a person to be a wise person, although not a righteous person. Right? And they didn't see any paradox or any contradiction in that. Alright? But in Judaism, that is absolutely not correct. A wise person is by definition a righteous person. Okay? By definition, a righteous person. And a truly righteous person is a wise person. Okay? And therefore, a wise person does. Okay? Okay? And his heart, when it's a wise heart, is to the right, ready to do. Okay? V'gam b'derech, and also on the way. Kishehasakal holech, when the fool walks, libo chaser, his heart is deficient. Va'amar lekol, and he says to all that he is a fool. Okay? Now how do we read this? How do we read this? That, number one, what distinguishes a wise person from a fool is the wise person is active and ready to do. In addition, a fool, even when he's walking, he's telling everybody how foolish he is. Now, you know, in general, when we're in public, we're on our best behavior. Right? You know, what we do in our private lives, we let it all hang out. But at least in our public life, you know, we know when we're walking in the street, we don't want people to think we're fools. So we know how to build an image whereby people think we're very smart. People think we're very wise. So King Solomon is warning the fool, you can't fake wisdom. Okay? And don't even try. Because the wise person basically walks his talk. And the wise person talks his walk. He doesn't talk about this, which he himself does not pursue in his own life. But the fool, basically, right, his walk reveals his talk. Okay? So therefore, the way the fool walks, everybody's going to eventually see it. Because he's a fool. Okay? He's a fool. In other words, like this. We're often masters of disguise, right? We are often masters of disguise. And we really spend a tremendous amount of time trying to convince everybody that we really have it all worked out. Okay? And that somehow we have made the mistake to think that if the public acknowledge us to be wise, then we must be wise. Because how could the public be wrong? Do you follow? So we try to substitute truth with public opinion. Okay? And we mistake images for reality. So the fool is very interested in creating an image of being wise, but it can never, ever really fake off being wise. Okay? I mean, for a little while, maybe. But ultimately, when you walk down the street, people are going to see that you are a fool. Therefore, if you are a fool, and you want people to think you're wise, don't make any public appearances. All right? Stay at home, but never be caught outside. Because when you're out there walking down the street, people are going to see. The fool wears his folly on his sleeve. Okay? Even though he tries to fool it. Yeah. Oh, there's no question. A person, you know, it is possible for a fool to become wise. There's no question. But King Solomon is warning us. Because since Solomon doesn't want you to fool yourself, which he's going to talk about in 1 second over here. So basically, he has given us two very important ideas. Actually, three very important ideas about wisdom. Number one, he tells us that wisdom must be complete. It cannot even have a little tiny fly of foolishness in it. He tells us, number two, that wisdom must be consistent. Okay? You're ready to do what you talk. Okay? You're ready to walk your talk. Alright? Number three, wisdom is authenticity. By definition, the sage is authentic. Okay? The sage is authentic. Now, I was reading a book of not a Jewish man, but he said some very brilliant things. You know, I was very surprised. Not that a non-Jewish man could say brilliant things, but, you know, I was very, very somewhat, you might say, challenged. Because this guy was saying things that I had learnt in the writings of Torah and the writings of Rav Kook, and I was kind of very challenged by, well, how did this guy come to this? I mean, it was just very brilliant. So I was speaking to a friend how I'm just so impressed with what this guy wrote. He says, oh, here, let me give you a little autobiography about the guy. I said, oh, yeah? Okay, fine. Gives me the autobiography, and I'm just in absolute shock. The guy was a drunk, okay? The guy was a womanizer. The guy was really just totally depressed. And that's the difference between him and Rav Kook, right? Because none of that, as far as we know, and I'm quite sure, is ever. You know, Rav Kook, he was what he spoke. Okay? You cannot really be wise in Judaism. Even if you say wise things, you're not really a sage. Okay? Unless you do what you're saying. The point that King Solomon is making is that very often people substitute, mistake image for reality. And so much of our world is based on image. You know, it's like you hire these phenomenal guys that build the president. The president, who knows, I'm not saying this, but the president could be the fool of fools, but these guys know exactly how to package the president in such a way, today the president will say that, tomorrow the president will be here, next day we'll see the president, he happens to be playing with little children, oh of course, and they know exactly, they know exactly how much gray has to be on the side over here to make him look distinguished. I mean, I remember in one of the campaigns how, strangely enough, this fellow was campaigning. As the campaign went on, he for some reason looked more and more gray. As the campaign went on, it could be because he was just so nervous he would lose, but I don't think so. I think as time went on, and they were kind of looking at the public polls, they said, no, they're thinking he's a little too young, so we have to add a little gray in his hair. No problem, right? But ultimately, once the guy will get in office, his walk will tell everybody that we voted in a fool. Now, I'm not in any way making any political statements right now, okay? But I think it's very important to understand that we are in a world that has spent so much time in developing images and has lost so much time on getting down to the reality of things. And we're so sure, and we ourselves have been so convinced, that if we can get the public to think we're wise, then we must be wise. Okay? If we can get the public to think we're successful, we must be successful. This, by the way, is, I think, a contributor to the instability of some of these publicly known great people. Because what they're trying to do is be who everybody thinks they are. And they themselves really want to believe that's who they are. But they're not. Okay, and I heard this from a fellow himself who was very involved in music. He's played with the greats of the greats, I'm telling you. And and later in his life he started getting involved in Torah and became a religious Jew. And I was talking to him about music, and he knew, I mean, everybody you'd name, he knows them, he played with them. And so he said, you know what? You know what's so difficult for these guys? You know, and I know it. It's trying to live up to what the public thinks of you and what you in fact made the public think about you. And that just torments. That's your own torture. That's just absolutely your own torture, because you've basically got yourself involved with an illusion. You've basically got yourself involved with an image which is not where you're at, okay? And you're spending so much trying to keep the image rather than dealing with the real problem. So he says over here that a fool, okay, by definition, can never really be truly wise, because wisdom is, by definition, authenticity. Okay? And authenticity, you can't fake authenticity. This is a contradiction in words. So therefore he says that when the fool is walking down the street, even then, his heart is deficient, he's really not aware enough what's really going on, and eventually he himself tells everybody he's a fool. The fool himself will be precisely the source whereby everyone will discover that he was a fool. It won't be somebody else that will say, hey, you know, so-and-so is a fool. Right? The truth is that you yourself will reveal it. Verse 4. Im ruach ha-moshel taleh lecha, if the spirit of the ruler comes upon you, mimkomcha al tenach, don't leave your place. Ki malpe yanich chataim gedolim, because weakness will allow for great sins. And so he teaches us another important factor for being wise. You have to be on top of it all the time. If the spirit of rulership, hinting to the Yetzirah, if you feel like this ruling power come upon you, don't budge. Okay? Wisdom takes perseverance. And that's so important, because a lot of people begin to trust their wisdom. Right? In other words, they assume that, gee, now I'm wise, especially now that everybody else says I'm wise, now that my books have sold all over the world, you know, and I'm known to be wise, and they're inviting me to all these talk shows, so I'm now the sage of sages, you know, now I'm scot-free. Okay? I can rely on that. You can never rely on that. Okay? Because King Solomon is teaching us that the struggle of life demands always being on guard. There's never a time that you could say, well, you know, I'm in a holding pattern over here when it comes to wisdom. I've got all the principles of life worked out. Everything's clear to me. Fine. You know, you can't do that. You always have to be ready for that foreign ruler to come upon you. And when he does come upon you, don't budge an inch. Okay? This is very strong. He's saying that the wise don't really compromise in terms of their values, I'm sure he's referring to. Okay? That you just don't say, what's the difference? Because as he told us before, that you look at this situation, it's but a tiny insect in the process of my life. And I'm a wise person. I'm a brilliant person. I've got it all worked out. So, you know, so if I have a little moment of a downfall, within the context of everything, it'll just be wiped out. Not true. Because something so small, a little pebble, could in fact cause an avalanche in your life. Okay? And people don't realize that. People don't realize it. It's what we learned about when we talked about Esav and Yaakov, whereby Esav really sold his world to come for beans. Okay? And we often do that. You know, we often take things and we don't even realize. Right? Remember he taught us that the wise have their eyes in their head. They see, they have insight, they have foresight, and they realize that something so small as this, which seems so small, in fact, don't move, don't budge. Weakness will bring about tremendous amounts of sin. This, by the way, is very important. He has told us that wisdom helps you overcome transgression. Okay? And he will repeat this idea, that it is not the simple of faith that are thereby somehow, vaccinated from doing sins. It's quite the opposite. We are taught in the Torah that Eim Amaretz Chassid. An ignoramus cannot become a Chassid. Okay? You cannot become a Chassid, a righteous person. No way! Wise and wisdom brings you to righteousness and goodness and doing of good deeds. Remember, in the last chapter, he warned us that you can't take wisdom too far, because sometimes you look at the mitzvot in the Torah and say, gee, this doesn't make any sense to me, I'm not going to do it. Wrong answer. In that case, you know, say, I will reserve judgment, and God's wisdom is beyond my own right now. In the meantime, I don't understand it, but I have an oath, I have a commitment, I'll do it. But he also tells us, on the other hand, that don't go to the other extremist thing, that simple faith is the path, right? And that wisdom will only undermine. It's quite the opposite, he tells us. That the fools make mistakes, and it is the fools that are transgressing, and it is the wise that understand. But once again, he tells us, he warns us, that wisdom is something you've got to make sure is in working order. You can't rely on the fact that the clock was wound up and it'll just keep going. Or that these are one of these solar, you know, watches and the sun will be shining all the time. And there'll never be an eclipse in my brain over here and in my wisdom. There can be. And therefore you always have to be on your guard. Your heart is to your right. You're on guard. Okay? You don't try to assume that looking wise means you are wise. Okay? And you never ever have overconfidence that now that you've got it all worked out, now that you've learned Torah, now that you are a great, incredible Talmid Chacham, that you have somehow been vaccinated from ever making mistakes. You always have to check yourself and check yourself and check yourself and make sure that your wisdom is alive and well and living in your life. Okay? Now, he goes on like this. Verse 5. Yesh ra'a ra'iti tachat ha-shemesh. Now there's this bad thing that I've seen happen under the sun. Okay? What is this bad thing? Kikshkaga shiyotze milifnei ha-shalit. It was like an accident that came out from the ruler. Now what is he referring to? It was like an accident that came out from the ruler. So this is one way of interpreting this, relating to his advice to the wise, and the caution to the fool and to the wise. There is a bad thing that happens under the skies. What happens? A person unintentionally says something, does something, but it comes out as, or he views himself as a ruler. Okay? Kishkagash yetzah mifnei hashalit. He views his life as an accident that comes from the ruler. Now, there's a number of ways that commentaries go, but in light of the theme that I'm developing here, this is one way of understanding it. You know, in the olden days, when a ruler makes a mistake, does he admit it? I don't even think it's true in the olden days. Even today, when a ruler makes a mistake, you know, does he admit it? No, why not? What an embarrassment! Everyone's going to find out the ruler made an embarrassment. Oh, that's so embarrassing. How can a ruler make a mistake? All right? This is the most horrible thing that can happen. Well, not the most, but one of the horrible things that can happen under the light of the sun. Because it's under the light of the sun that people are considered and concerned with their image. The way things look in the light of the sun. Rather than the way things look in the light of God. Okay? That's what concerns me. So when I live under the light of the sun, so I got to look good under the light of the sun. So I'm interested in having a nice tan, right? Rather than the fact that everything's rotting inside, okay? I'm interested in a nice, clever veneer, rather than everything is really rotting inside. And so what happens under the sun is that the ruler who makes a mistake, okay, that people act like a ruler who made a mistake. You follow this? And just like a ruler who would make a mistake and never admit it, and not only will he not admit it, but he'll go at long lengths to convince himself and everybody else that it wasn't a mistake. It was absolutely intentional. It's exactly what he wanted, and it's absolutely the right thing. Okay? Absolutely the right thing. What it's like, you know, the emperor's new clothes. You know, it's like everybody says, wow, they're beautiful. He himself is feeling really proud, and only one kid says, isn't he naked? Isn't the emperor wearing no clothes? Okay? So under the light of the sun, they said he's got beautiful garments. He feels good because they're telling him he's got beautiful garments. Okay? And really, nobody has the courage to say, this is a mistake. The wise know that they can make mistakes. The wise don't trust their wisdom. The wise don't rely on their wisdom. The wise don't assume that everything they do is wise and that they cannot make a mistake. Oh, but the fool is convinced he's wise. Only those who think they're wise are fools. And those who know they don't know are actually the ones who do know. Try and figure that one out. Say that a couple hundred times, okay? In some two over here. There's a very bad thing I've seen under the sun. What is that? Paraphrase or, you know, bracket as a fault, like as an unintentional mistake that went out from the ruler. That's the way people treat their lives. That's the way they view their lives. Nitana sechel bimromim. What was exactly this mistake that the ruler made, that people as a ruler make a mistake and yet don't have the courage to admit it? Okay? What is that? That they put the fool on top of everything and those who are rich, okay, under everything. In other words, he got his priorities all screwed up. He happened to make a mistake. He happened to appoint a fool in a very powerful position, right? In a very prestigious position, and he made a mistake. And he appointed a person who was rich, rich in wisdom, rich in whatever, not just, you know, not just financially rich, and somehow put him in a lower position. But of course, does he have the courage to tell the world that I made a mistake? Of course not. That would look terrible to the king. All right? That would look terrible to the king. So he tries to convince everybody that the fool is really the rich and the rich is really the fool, and we become ensnared in a web of lies, of images, of falsities. Okay? And so, Ra'iti, I saw, King Solomon says, a situation of Adim al Susim, that in fact what happened was that it was slaves that were on the horses, Visarim, and that there were princes that were walking before them. You see that? That's what happens. Okay? The priorities were all screwed up. It was a major, major mistake, but the mistake, the person who's related to mistake as a ruler related to mistakes doesn't have the courage to say that I made the mistake. All right? And so this is another advice to the wise to protect them from becoming a fool. The wise know that they make mistakes. And the wise know that a little fly could destroy everything. So you don't want to let this mistake just go by. You don't want to say nobody will notice it. Okay? It's a mistake, and I gotta fix it. Alright. Verse 8. Chofer gomatz bo yipol. A person who digs a hole, into it he shall fall. Uparetz geder, and the one who paretz geder breaks down the walls or the fences, okay, yishacheno nachash, the snake will bite him. Now, another important piece of advice. Okay? Remember that the fool who lives in the world of his images, okay, in the world of facade, he's only hurting himself. A person who digs a hole is going to fall into that hole. Okay? You say, you know, so I dug a hole. So what has it got to do with me? Someone else will fall into it. No, you'll fall into it. Okay? And a person who breaks down a wall, and of course, a geder is also, I'm sure, hinting to Jewish law, because Jewish law is also referred to as a fence. So they make a hole in the fence. They think, oh, you know, I'll get away with it. I can still look good. A snake will bite you. All right? In other words, the question isn't, can I fool God? Can I get away with it? Because first of all, you can't fool God, and you won't get away with it, but it doesn't matter, because that's not the issue. You can't fool yourself. And that's all you're really doing is fooling yourself. To think that you are wise, when in fact you are a fool. And therefore, you're really not undermining God, but you're undermining yourself. Basically what comes to mind when you read this, and anybody I think would think of this immediately, is the story of Purim. Because the story of Purim is about Haman, who's decided that he's going to destroy the Jewish people. Of course, why did he decide to destroy the Jewish people? Because he couldn't take the embarrassment that Mordechai the Jew would not bow down to him. That Mordechai was the only one that was willing to say, this guy's a creep. He's basically a creep, and I'm not willing to bow down and just live with the facade of this guy thinking that he's really something when he's really absolutely nothing. Okay? However, Haman doesn't like that. And so Haman decides to destroy Mordechai. Not only decides to destroy Mordechai, he decides to destroy the entire Jewish people. Okay? And in fact, he gets the king to agree. And by the way, later on when the king realizes the mistake he made, he doesn't publicly say he made a mistake. Okay? He doesn't say, you know, let's issue another decree that my earlier decree is wrong and they shouldn't kill the Jews. But rather what he does is he issues a new decree that the Jews should fight back. Do you hear this? That's the fool of the fools. That's the king who's not willing to say, listen, I made a mistake, I take it back. No, I said that everyone should kill the Jews and now I'm saying all the Jews should fight back. You know? And I just try to fix it by not fixing it at all, by adding more stupid things to the puzzle. And so to Haman. Haman can't stand Mordechai. And Haman's dream is basically to kill Mordechai. And he builds for Mordechai a gallows to hang Mordechai. But of course, who in fact is Haman building this gallows for? And who ultimately is hung by that very same gallows? It is Haman himself! Okay? And that's what you're doing in your life. That the fool's acts are only hurting the fool, is not hurting God. And the fool who thinks that somehow he's able to hide from God, you can hide, you can run, but you can't run from yourself. You can't hide from yourself. And therefore the hole that you make, which you'd like to maybe cover up, is the one that you'll forget, and you will be the one that will fall into that very same hole. Okay? And the one who breaks the fence, right? Then you're the one that's going to suffer. Why? Because you will be vulnerable. Okay? So here you are feeling locked into this fence, you know, feeling somewhat limited, feeling somewhat, you know, stifled. So you break out of the fence and you want to get into the big new world. But you know what? When you break out of the fence, as you're jumping for the field, what in fact did you do? You made a hole which enabled all the snakes in the field to come in and bite you. In other words, you just make yourself vulnerable to pain by being a fool and continuing the foolish act that you are wise. Do you follow this? In fact, this is what the Talmud says. The Talmud recounts a story whereby Rav Chanina ben Dusa saw a hole where a snake, you know, a poisonous snake was there. And he said, it is not the snake that kills. Okay? The snake just, I think, bit somebody and the person died. So he says, it's not the snake that kills. It's the sin that kills. Watch. And he put his foot on the hole of the snake's, you know, hole, right? And the snake comes up and bites him. Nothing happens to Rav Chanina ben Dusa. So therefore, Judaism has a very strong teaching. Judaism says that when you follow the rules of the Torah, which are really the rules of life, then it's only in your best interest. Because when one breaks the rules, what they're actually doing is making themselves vulnerable. And that's what you're really doing. You're making yourself more vulnerable, be more hurt, to be more damaged. And therefore, the fool thinks, I'm getting away with it. God doesn't see. Nobody else knows. That's the fool. The wise person says, please, what are you talking about? It's you that sees. And it's you that hurt yourself. And therefore, you're bringing this whole thing upon yourself. And it, basically, the idea is, every transgression has written on it, return to sender. And that's basically where it goes. It's just, what I put out comes right back to me. All right? And I have to be aware of that. All right? I have to be aware of that. So, chofer gomets, a person who digs a hole, will in fact fall into his very own hole. A person who breaks the boundaries will become vulnerable. They themselves will become a victim. Alright? Verse 9. Masia avanim ye'atsev. He who moves the rocks will himself be saddened by it. Okay? In other words, he starts doing, rearranging everything. Alright? In fact, he will stumble over what he rearranged. Alright? Boke etzim yisaken bam. A person who cuts the trees is endangering himself. In other words, he thinks, well, the tree will fall on somebody else, big deal. It'll fall on you. That's the way it comes around. Okay, that's the way it comes around. And this we have discussed before. The Talmud says that the sin, the transgression, is its own punishment. Okay? Now when we're children, so we think, oh, you know, my father's going to punish me. You know, if I go out and eat the candy, my father doesn't want me to eat the candy. And if I do eat the candy and he catches me, then he will punish me. So then what do I learn? Eat the candy and don't get caught. That's what you learn, right? That's what you learn. Well, that's when you're learning Torah when you're a child. Yes, the Torah is full of various punishments. Okay? And that is the proper lingo for, you know, the earlier period of mankind. You might call it the childhood of mankind. But as mankind grows older and he begins to read the Torah and starts to read under the lines, he realizes that if I eat the candy, it's not that my father will punish me, but it's the candy that will rot my teeth. Okay? And therefore, I can't run away from it. It's not that the hole might not be discovered by somebody, or if it is, they'll fall into it and it's got nothing to do with me. I will fall into it. It's not that if I cut this tree and I don't say, you know, what do they say when they cut down the tree? Timber! Well, so what? It'll fall on someone else's head. No, it'll actually, instead of falling this way, it'll fall on you. In fact, you probably cut right underneath yourself. And that's basically what people are doing. They're cutting the ground from beneath themselves. The ground of life, we talked about it, it's the ultimate reality, it's God. And what I'm doing when I'm sinning, when I'm transgressing, when I'm not following, so to speak, the will of the Torah, Torah says, you're simply cutting the ground beneath your feet. You're only hurting yourself, you're only pretending, you're only faking yourself out, you're doing harm to no one but yourself. But the fool is most concerned with the image, right? And the wise would rather acknowledge the truth, even if the truth might, in a painful way, suggest that I have to change my life. Okay, moving right along here. Sure. If you really change, then you'll fill that hole up. Because if you really did change, then in the metaphor, then you basically filled the hole. That's what happens. Especially if you do tshuva from love, then you make that hole and make it into a mountain. You know, and it becomes not something you fall into, but something that elevates you even higher. Okay, verse 10. Im kehe habarzel, if the axe is blunt, vuhu lo panim kilkel, and he did not previously sharpen it, v'chayelim yigaber, even so, what will the fool do? He will increase the army. Now, I think, and some commentaries say, that is a metaphor for increasing forces. He brings in more forces. V'yitaron hekser chachma. Okay? And the advantage of wisdom is preparation. In other words, how does the fool deal with his life? Okay? So a fool has an axe. And he's trying to break through to something. You know, to a new level. Whatever metaphorically he's referring to. But the axe is blunt. Why is the axe blunt? Because he didn't take the necessary time. Right? The preparations to sharpen it. So what does the fool do? Rather than realize, my gosh, I have an axe which isn't sharp. Why don't I go sharpen it? So what does he do? Instead of sharpening it and recognizing he made a mistake and simply start all over again, what does he do? He applies more force. Do you follow this? You follow this? So I take an axe which isn't sharp, and I start chopping at this tree, I get nowhere, so instead of saying, you know what, why don't I sharpen the axe, I start banging at it even harder, and harder, and harder, rather than saying, you know what, I just go home. Just go home and sharpen this axe. What do you mean, go home now and sharpen this axe? I'm already here. Right? So what do? I basically take the short way, which ends up being the longest way. Okay? Rather than taking the longest way, which would have ended up being the shortest way. The best thing is go home and sharpen it. Start all over again. Whatever. You know? But once again, the fool, the symbol of the fool, is stubbornness. Right? A stubborn person is by definition a fool because they're not willing to say, I made a mistake, I didn't prepare properly. Okay? This hole is I'm gonna fall into it, so therefore if I made a hole, I should fill it rather than say, someone else will fall into it, it'll be their problem, not mine. It's always your problem. Okay? So the fool is absolutely stubborn. Okay? The wise should be not stubborn, but persistent. Persistent in their wisdom. Not to be overconfident. Not to think that, you know, so what, I made a little mistake. Not to think that, well, now I'm in wisdom, I'm in holding pattern, I'm somehow, you know, vaccine from making mistakes. That is the wise. But the fool is stubborn and so hard-headed that he just feels that if he didn't chop it with the axe, it's because he's not applying more force. It's like, you know, it's like, and I'm sure we've all done this before, or certainly I have. You get to the door, you've got the key, you start opening the door, and it's stuck. You can't open the door. So there's two things you can do. You can either just stop and think very carefully what's going on, or you can apply more pressure. Okay? Very often what people do is they start applying more pressure. And then what happens? They break the key in the door, and now they can't ever get in, and now they're gonna have to take even longer, they're gonna have to call a locksmith, they're all closed, it's the middle of the night, finally this guy comes, he doesn't have the exact key, he tells you he's gonna have to drill through your door, and all of that happened because maybe, just maybe, you know, sometimes the way keys are cut, that they're a little off, and all you have to do is pull it out gently and then turn. That's all it took. That's all it took. But instead of using the wisdom, I used force. And this is often the way people live their lives. Rather than using wisdom, which will enable things to actually go smoother, they feel that the problem is they're not applying enough force. You know? And that is, by the way, going back to what he said about the wise and the fool. The wise know that wisdom doesn't take coerciveness. If it's truly wise words, it'll go into people's hearts. If it's truly wise words, it will change them. But the fools, they yell and they coerce and they keep talking because they feel, you know, that I gotta knock some sense into you. That's it. You gotta knock some sense into this kid. Children want you to just speak to them. Speak to them. That's all they want you to try. You know, just speak to them. They'll listen. But you feel like I'm not getting through, and that's because I'm not applying enough pressure to get through. So when you're working and you're trying to get through to your friend, and you think you're not getting through, so then rather than continuing along the same path, why don't you take, you know, method B? You know? Rather than stubbornly continue with plan A, take plan B, you know. But this is the way the fool goes. He takes a blunt axe, chops away, doesn't get anywhere, and assumes it's because he's not being forceful enough. Okay? Not being forceful. By the way, it just reminds me in terms of shiduchim, because I've heard many people call me up, and you know, it's not going well in the shidduch, in the match, you know, they're going out on a date, and it's not going, and the guys say, you know, I know why this isn't working, because I'm not being more forceful with her. You know, so I think what I should just simply do is call up and say, Mary Lou, you're going out with me, we're getting married, we're having 10 kids, and that's it. Alright, that's why I'm not getting anywhere with her. And then very often people, once again, substitute force for wisdom. Okay? That might will make right. Alright, good. So, he continues on to say, verse 11, Im yishoch ha-nachash below lachash, if the snake will bite without a whisper, ve'en yitereon lebal ha-lashon, And there is no advantage to the master of the mouth. Now this can be read in a number of ways. Okay? In a number of ways. One way of reading it is it's somewhat like a question. Will the snake bite without whisper? Right? There is no advantage to the master of the tongue. How can we read this? So one way of reading this is that it's referring to Lashon Hara. Right? And that's what some of the commentaries say. That it's referring to Lashon Hara. What happens in Lashon Hara?
If you get bit by the snake, which of course is the symbol of Lashon Hara, why? Because who spoke the first Lashon Hara in the world? The snake in the Garden of Eden. And who did the snake speak Lashon Hara about? God.
Said, you know why God doesn't want you to eat that tree? Because he's jealous. Because he doesn't want competition. Because he doesn't want you to achieve a status of godliness. That's why. So that was Lashon Hara, of course. Right? It was worse than Lashon Hara. Okay? And so, if the snake bites, Im yishach nachash belo lachash, will the snake bite the one who doesn't speak? No, the snake only bites those who speak Lashon Hara. Okay? So once again, you made yourself vulnerable to your problems. And don't think, oh gee, why is this happening to me? This happened to me because I made myself vulnerable to this. Now of course we did learn another, and we have to balance it out. Sometimes there's a reason why Hashem wants you to go through this, you know, and it's not because you did anything wrong, it might be even because you did something right, and you can do even something even more right for the world by being able to accept this challenge and move through it, you know. It's like the story once heard from Rabbi Avi Weiss of a man, famous man who, a rabbi who lost everything in the Holocaust, and his whole family, all his children, moved to America, got married, and his first child was blind. You say, my gosh, how much tzuras can a person have? And yet what this man ultimately did is he overcame it by building the first institute for the blind in terms of a Jewish learning institute for the blind. And now he has helped the blind, you know, all over the world in terms of Torah. And so once again, you don't know why you're going through it. It might be that you have a certain mission that you can do for the world, and this particular personal crisis will help you solve the crisis of many other people. You never know. But in this case, we're looking at it in terms of the snake, and a person gets bit by the snake only because they themselves have become like a snake. They themselves have spoken Lashon Hara. And therefore, there's no advantage to the master of the mouth. Okay? The master of the mouth has no advantage. If you talk it up, okay? If you speak Lashon Hara, then don't be surprised if people speak Lashon Hara about you. Okay? Because that's the way it goes. And that's what I always, you know, whenever I'm around somebody and I hear them speaking Lashon Hara, the first thing I say to myself is, if this person can say those things about other people, wait until I hear what they're probably saying about me too. And therefore, you don't want to befriend the slanderer one, because the slanderer, and you think, you know, really, we're becoming really buddies. You know, they say some Lashon Hara, I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, oh, he says, yeah, yeah, oh yeah, and I want to add that to it. Yeah, and I'll add this to it. And the whole time, what he's actually going to do, he's going to bite you right back. Because the Baal Lashon, the master of the Lashon, is only setting themselves up for being the victim of their own crime. Okay? You become the victim of your own crime. And therefore, crime doesn't pay, not because God will catch you. The crime doesn't pay because it will catch you itself. And you will catch yourself. And that's one way of reading this. Another way of reading this is, will the snake bite without whispering? Therefore, there is no advantage to the one who speaks. What does that mean? And I think this fits into the advice to the wise and the fool. Something that he's talked about a little bit before, which is, nothing happens in your life without a warning. Basic rule. You will always get a warning. The only, you know, I'm sure you've had the experience where you like lost your wallet. And then when you finally realize you lost your wallet, you say, I don't know, there was something. I knew this was going to happen. Only in retrospect did you ever have that experience where you, in retrospect, felt like I shouldn't have put my wallet there. And I had, there was something inside me that kind of made me feel I shouldn't have done that. But I did. All right? I remember one time when I was in yeshiva, I was walking down the stairs from the Beit Midrash, from the learning hall, to the kitchen where we eat. And I'd walk down these stairs, you know, 4 or 5 times a day. I mean, you know, we'd be up and down these stairs. One day I'm walking down these stairs as confident as you always, you know, you walk downstairs. You've walked down these stairs a million times before. So you have the confidence of the wisdom, you know. And so I'm walking down the stairs and all of a sudden, I get this feeling. Something tells me I'm going to fall, you know. And so at that very second, I grabbed onto the banister. And at that very second, the guy beside me fell down the stairs. I tripped him. Anyways, I'm like this, and he fell over my hands. No, what happened was, it was amazing. It was just shocking. This guy, Mamish, tripped and was going face down. It was like 4 steps to the next landing, face down right into the landing, put his hands out front, and he stopped that much from the floor. His nose was like this, and I'm looking at him. His feet were still on the fourth floor. Of the staircase, and I was in absolute shock because at that moment I felt I was going to fall. You always get a red light in your life. Always the red light will go off. The problem is that there's no advantage to the one who talks because I'm talking too much and I'm not listening. And if I listen, so why did the snake bite me? How is it possible that the snake bit me? Because I'm such a fool. I'm so involved with talking and talking and talking and making errors about myself and convincing everybody I'm so smart and I'm so wise and I know what's flying, that in the interim while I'm talking, I don't hear this little sound, which is a rattlesnake about to kill me. And that was because I was talking so much, and I should be listening. So the wise, in contrast to the fools, they are wise not because they have so much to say, but they're wise because they know they have so much to hear. And the fools are fools because they think they don't have to hear anything because they got it all worked out. In fact, everybody's got to hear them. And so they're talking and talking and talking and talking. That's also foolishness. You shouldn't do that too, because that's lashon hara about yourself too. You know, that the fool talking about himself, talking about others, whatever he's talking, he's just talking too much. And all the talk is getting in the way of listening. Listening. It's like, it's almost as if I'm sure, and this would be a great scene in a movie, where two people on the bus, and they're both talking, but nobody's listening. And you kind of listen to the conversation, realize that this person didn't respond to what that person said, and that person wasn't even responding to this person saying, and they both at the end say, I love talking with you. Thank you very much. Fantastic. Really enjoyed it. I don't know if I told you the story when I was working for this Jewish organization. So I was so excited. I so much wanted to teach these kids about Judaism, but nobody wanted to hear. Nobody asked me any questions, and I was very, very frustrated. So one day I was driving from a program, and these three girls needed to get home. And so I said, I'll give you a lift. So we're in the car, and it's somewhat quiet in the car. There was a real awkward silence in the car. And I kind of felt something going on, like in the back seat, like, you say something, you know, because you got to say something to the rabbi, because when rabbi's around, of course, you can't speak, because, you know, they're not normal people. So you have to ask them a question, because they're rabbis, and rabbis answer questions. And so one of them says, Rabbi, could you tell me, how do you know that God revealed himself at Sinai? Now, I was so excited. Finally, one kid, after all these months of working here, one kid asked me about Judaism, asked me what's the authenticity of Judaism. I was so excited, and I realized that I only had 3 minutes because I'm taking these kids home. So I said, well, I got to get it in now. So I start talking, you know, and I said, well, and I start bringing in all these various interesting evidences and proofs and this and that. And every 4 or 5 words, this one girl say, right here, Rabbi. Oh, yeah, sure. Well, anyways, left here, Rabbi. And as I was saying, right here, Rabbi. And then I all of a sudden got this weird feeling that not one person in this car was listening to me. Not one person in this car was listening. So you know what I did? So I said to them, listen, the bottom line is that if Mickey Mouse reveals himself to Donald Duck, how could it not be true? And you know what these three girls said? That makes sense, Rabbi. Thank you. I'm telling you, this is exactly what happened. It's exactly what happened. And I realized that I was the fool of fools. Because I assumed that they were listening, and I assumed by talking and talking that I'm getting anywhere with them. I was getting nowhere with them. They didn't want to get the answer. They couldn't care less about the answer. They were only being polite, and I was being stupid. Anyways, but I've done tshuva on that. and I don't give people rides anymore. Okay. There is no advantage to the one who talks. Okay, so don't think because you have a lot to say, or don't think because a person speaks a lot, they have a lot to say. Let's put it that way. Okay? Because that's the point. Don't think because you speak a lot, you have something to say. Very often those who speak a lot, it's because they have nothing to say. And that's why they need to speak so much. Verse 12. Divrei pi chacham chein. You know how you can know that this is a wise person? Because the words of their mouth is charming. It's charming. There's a magic to their words. There's a special attraction to their words. Okay? V'siftot tzil, and the lips of the fool will swallow him up. Once again, he tells us that the fool is only fooling himself. The fool is only fooling himself. But what's interesting over here is he says that it is the words of the wise man's mouth that has chein, and yet he refers to the fool as lips. Notice, it's the fool who has lips, it's the wise man who has a mouth. Because the wise man, he speaks from his insides. And the fool is only moving his lips. And nothing, absolutely nothing is coming out of the fool's mouth. It looks like it. But all of a sudden you realize that it's just their lips moving. And there's nothing else moving in this entire conversation. And so too over here, divrei pi chacham chein, the wise man's mouth, the words that come out of his mouth, they're charming. That's what wisdom is. It's charming. It's irresistible. Wisdom should be irresistible. It really should. But the ktzil, the fool, his lips are yapping away, and what he's basically doing is ultimately somewhere along the line, he will get his tongue caught between his lips. Okay? Techilat divrei pihu sichlot. The beginning of what a fool says is foolishness. V'achrit pihu, and the end of his mouth. Now, interesting why he went back to calling him having mouth. But when he does seem to say something that seems to be coming from his inside, well, I want you to know that the beginning of the fool's speech is stupid, it's silly, and the end of his speech is evil. Now this is very, very strong. Very, very strong. Because King Solomon is saying to us and warning us that don't think that by listening to the fool, you know, you're just listening to a fool. And nothing will be harmful about listening to stupid things. You know? Because in the end, it will bring upon a person evil. Alright? And that goes back to what we've been saying. The fool equals the evil person. And the Talmid Chacham, the sage, equals the righteous person. Okay? And a fool will not be a good person because he has no wisdom. And a good person would never be a fool. And so, you have to be so careful because you don't want to listen to fools. And fools have a phenomenal way of talking themselves out of a bag. Right? And that's what they do. So that's what fools do. But what happens is you say, oh, it doesn't matter, so what? It matters. Because foolishness leads to transgression. Foolishness leads to serious mistakes. And it's foolishness. And how many times has the judge looked at these kids who raped a person and they just said, well, we were just having fun. Did you ever hear that? We were just having fun. Hey, gee, we were just kidding around. Hey, we're just kidding around. And kidding around ends up in jails. You know, I mean, that's what can happen. Because you want to maintain wisdom. Wisdom is life. Wisdom will bring your face light. Wisdom will give you life. But foolishness will impoverish you. And foolishness is only destroying yourself. And foolishness is only really fooling yourself. And so he goes on in verse 14. Vasakal yabed dvarim lo yeda adam mashiyeh. And you know what a fool does? He talks about things that nobody knows about. Okay? Nobody knows about this. And this is another sign of fool. Fools, they speculate. They start talking about things that nobody really knows. But they have tremendous opinions and you know, it's like, is like people sitting on the park bench, and they've already figured out exactly what's going to happen at the end of the movie called World History. This is what's going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and this is going to happen, and we're all going to be dead. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, you're right. And no, this is what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. So don't talk about what's going to happen. Talk about what's now. And therefore, the fool will increase talk about that which no man knows what will be. Vasher yemeacharav, and that which was behind him, who can tell him? This fool is talking about the future when in fact nobody can tell him what even happened in his past. Okay? He doesn't even understand the past. Nobody's able to explain to him his past, and he's already explaining to everybody the future. So therefore, the fool doesn't have a handle on his past. And therefore, the fool tries to convince everybody to know something because he knows about the future. Because he can speculate about what's going to be. But you don't know what's going to be. And you certainly don't know what's going to be if you don't know what was. And that's part of the problem. The people just don't think. It's like there was a cute ad which was for Jewish learning. It says, Joey Stein has a brilliant future, but he has no past. Okay? And the idea is that people think, well, gee, if I learn Judaism, then I'm going in the past, I'm going to ancient ideas. Right? No. And so he says something just brilliant, the next step. Okay, so the fool talks about stuff that he can't talk about, that nobody talks about. And also, another way of reading this is the fool increases his words, lo yede adam mashiyeh, and yet a person doesn't know what he's getting at, where he's going. In other words, the fool cannot make a point. Right? You don't know what he's talking about. And you have to be so careful, because there are people that can get up and they can talk and they can talk and you can talk, and then you walk out of there and someone looks at you and say, well, what did he say? And you say, he's brilliant. He is absolutely brilliant. You say, well, how do you know? I didn't understand a word he had to say. And therefore he must be brilliant, because he obviously knew what he had to say. No, no, no. The wise can articulate. And if they can't articulate, then they are not wise. Okay? And the wise can say it in just a few words, and that's a beautiful thing about when you learn the Torah commentaries. They say things, and they don't waste words. They make their points. Nowadays, when you read a book, the idea comes up in the book maybe 5 times. Nowadays, when you teach a class, you have to go around and around and around. Okay? But in a class, it's a little more difficult because people have something in front of them, which makes it a little harder. But nonetheless, you have to be so careful. Because I know people who would go to these classes, and it specifically happens a lot in some of these classes on mysticism and Kabbalah, and people come away and go, wow, wow, wow. He said, well, what did he say? I don't know, but it was wow, wow, wow. So how do you know there was something to it? Because he just knew. I mean, you could just see it. The guy talked, nonstop for an hour and a half. He obviously knew what he was talking about, right? If nobody knows what you're talking about, chances are you don't either, okay? And you've got to acknowledge being the fool. And therefore, verse 15, Amal haksilim tiageno. Asher lo yada lelechet el ir. This is a fantastic verse. This is, I think, one of my favorite verses. He says that the struggle and the labor of the fools only tires them out, because he doesn't know how to get to the city. Now, what does that mean? That the fool's labor is exhausting because he doesn't know how to get to the city? The city, everybody knows how to get to the city. But you know what a fool is? A fool is unaware that there's already a paved highway, but the fool thinks that he's got to reinvent the wheel, basically. The fool has decided that there's an unknown path, that he and only he can pave the way. And yet, when he gets there, he'll see that everybody's there, and everybody knows, and this city's on the map. People think that big discoveries, and he's working, he's only exhausting himself, and he thinks he's really getting somewhere, and he's going through the bushes, and he's going up the hill, he's climbing under this, and he's swimming over that, and then he finally gets there, and when he gets there, he realizes that all it took was to go around the corner, and there it was. But the fool always relies on himself. is absolutely sure that the journey he is taking, no one has ever ventured. No one has ever gone through this, because my life is always and only virgin terrain, virgin territory. I am an explorer. And the fool is so foolish, because do you think that you're the first one to start the journey of life? Do you think the city, the destination called happiness, significance, and meaning isn't on the map yet? After thousands of years of human development, after thousands of years of human struggle, do you think that the city of happiness, peace, tranquility, significance, productivity, and meaning and purpose isn't on the map yet? You've got to find it. You've got to design this whole absolutely new, remarkable way to get it, and then you'll tell everybody else how to get there? And this is the whole point about Torah. Because Judaism says, we've got a map. And you know what? This map has worked. And that's one of the reasons I truly believe in Judaism. Because how do you know a map is the right map? If you walk into a desert and all of a sudden you're there and you see a map on the floor, would you be so stupid to say, oh, you know what? I'll get there with, I don't need a map. Say, my gosh, thank God there's a map. I got a map. Oh, I'm so happy there's a map. Now, let's say you start following the map and then you see another map. And this map contradicts the other map. How will you know which map is right? How frustrated you'll get. That's how you'll know. Because a map is the reflection of the terrain. And if it says on your map that if you go two blocks down to the right, that's where the public bathrooms are, and you get there and you find a fountain with a little Cupid doing his thing into the water, don't make a mistake and think that was the public bathroom. Because it's not. Don't try and fool yourself. The map will reflect the terrain, and it'll help you get from point A to point B. It will help you get there. And if it doesn't, then it's not the map. And that is one of the proofs of Torah. It works. It works. It worked. It has kept us alive in the most difficult situations. It has enabled the people to survive every kind of crisis you could ever imagine you could have in your life. And here we are, going forward, happening again. And so why do I think I have to reinvent the map when there are maps around? And the city is on the map. It's not some unknown little town that you need to discover. We've been looking for this city long time ago, and many have taken this path. Many have taken this path. And yet, it's a highway. Could you imagine this beautiful highway? And yet, nobody has ever taken it. And everybody thinks they got to figure out their own little way to get there. When there's a super highway, it gets you right there, smooth and easy. And so too, he says that the fool tires himself out. He exhausts himself. And again, everybody thinks that he is so productive. He's sweating. He's fetching. He's saying, I did it this way and I did it that way. And everyone's so impressed. Look what he did. But in fact, the one who knows realizes that the whole time he was thrashing himself through the bushes and through the jungle, just about 15 yards over to the right was a highway that was paved long time ago. And this is what I truly believe. The highway was paved long time ago. It's called Halacha. And it's a highway to get us from this world to the next world. To get us from the human predicament to the divine identification, the divine intimacy. And it's right there. And it's right there. But the fool, you know, doesn't have the humbleness to say that maybe people have done this before. Asher lo yadol alechad, he doesn't know how to get to the city. Everybody knows how to get to the city except the fool. Because he wants to be the first one there. And when he gets there, he'll realize that people were a long time ago there. Im lech, im oy lach eretz shemalkech nar v'sarech babokir yochlu. He says, oy to you land that your king is a lad, a nar. Now, nar, I don't know if you grew up in a Yiddish house, but I grew up in a Yiddish house, and a nar is a fool. Why is a nar a fool? It literally means a kid. But kids are like kiddie, you know, they're kidding around, they're silly, you know, they're kids, they're agitated, they can't sit, you know, they can't sit, they're totally impatient. Oy to you, a world whose king is a kid, and whose princes eat in the morning. Now, this is what I think he means. He's looking at the world, And he's looking at the fools. And basically, you know what's wrong with the fools? The fools think that God is a fool. The fools think, oi to you, a world whose king is a child, an immature, impetuous, impatient, compulsive child, and whose princes, who are the princes in this symbol? The people, because we are the princes of God. That's the understanding of it. The prince, the ambassador of God, has come to do the work of God in this world. That's our job. But when the prince thinks the king is a fool, then what does that mean about you? So what you think about God is ultimately what you think about yourself. Okay? And if you think that God is a fool, and if you think that the king of the universe is some impetuous, crazy kid, so then there's no reason for you to get up and do anything but sit around and eat all morning. So what do the princes do rather than getting up, feeling empowered and excited because they're doing the work of the king, because they're building the kingdom of a great, noble, wonderful king? They sit around and eat. And that's the fool. Because the fool is fooling himself about God. Do you think God is a kid? He doesn't know what's flying in this world. Do you think God is a kid? He created a world that's so haphazard and so careless and so stupid that things don't make any sense and will not, and it doesn't even make sense to him, but it's okay. He's a kid. He's just kidding around. You know? Do you think that God created the world like a kid painting with numbers? You know? And got all the numbers wrong? It's like when I was a kid, we used to make perfume. Did you make perfume when you were a kid? Yeah, it's great. You know, like you know what you're gonna do? You take a little toilet cleaner, and then you add to that, you know, a little cinnamon, and you add to that, and then you put this nice sign on it, and you give it to your friends, some perfume for you. And that's how it was a concoction. Do you think the world is the concoction of some kid? Because if you do, then that will be exactly your guide to life. Because if the king is a kid, and certainly there's no reason for me to not be a fool. And so, oi to you, a world, because the world thinks, people think that God is just crazy, right? In fact, wasn't that the name of a movie? The Gods Are Crazy? What? Right. And so that's what people think. Verse 17, Ashrech Aretz, happy are you, a land, Shemalkech ben Chorim, that your king is a noble one. Happy is a kingdom. A world where people know that the king is a noble, great king. V'saret be'et yachlu, and therefore his princes, which is you and me, will eat in the right time, bigvura, and we will operate from a position of strength. Because if I know that God created this world with tremendous amount of intention, tremendous amount of wisdom, so much wisdom that I can't figure it out. And so that when I figure it out, it's not because God's crazy, but it's because it's so profoundly wise, it's so profoundly brilliant that I can't yet figure this out. So when a person realizes that the king of the world, the king of the universe, is a noble, great king, then that will impact upon me. And I will not want to be a fool. But you want to be a fool in the world which is ruled by the fool. But when you realize that you're in a world that is ruled by the wise, the most wise, then that empowers you. And you say, I gotta do something because I can do something. Because I am a prince. And God has empowered me to be his prince. To do the work. To pave the way. To establish the kingdom. So. See, now that's, you know, that's the whole point. Basically, realize that if you think the world is an accident, then basically what you're saying is when you look in the mirror, you see an ape. Okay, but if you look in the mirror and you're not willing to accept that you're an ape, then don't be willing to accept that there is no king. But if you're willing to look in the world, and if you think God is a fool, then when you look in the mirror, then you basically think you're a fool. But if you look at yourself and say, my gosh, look how much potential I have. Look how much wisdom I have. Look how much I can do. So then that would only reflect on Hashem. It would only reflect on God. And so he says, happy are you, a world whose king is noble, and whose princes eat in the right time, with power they operate their lives, velobishti, and they don't waste their lives with drink. Okay? Waste their lives with drink. Verse 18, ba'atziltayim yemach hamikre, through your own laziness will your roof fall in. Okay? ubishiflut yadayim, and with not being able to raise your hands because they're down, you know, yidlof habayit, your house will leak. It's up to you. Don't blame anybody else. It's up to you. If you don't want your house to leak, if you don't want your environment to crash, then you got to take your life in your hands. That's what they, there's a nice Hebrew ad that's going on that says, Nikach anikayon biyadayim. Let's take cleaning up the world into our hands. Okay? Because if we don't take it into our hands, then let's not be surprised that it's full of dirt. Lischok osim. But laughter they make out of it. Okay? Lechem v'yayin yismach chayim. This is how I think he reads it. I really think this is what he means. So he's basically, again, once again, referring to the fool. Looking at the world, you know, if you're weak, if you're lazy, then your house is going to fall apart. But they make a joke out of it. Right? People look at their house falling apart, and all they can do is make a joke out of it. In fact, very often, that's what jokes are about. Jokes are about crises. And I remember, it was so strange, but when I was growing up, you know, I'd watch these comedies and these TV shows. So I remember I really liked I Love Lucy. Did you like, you know, remember I Love Lucy? I'm not so old. Come on. I Love Lucy will go on forever. Okay? Just know that. Anyways, just know that. The gematria of Lucy equals. But you know what? I really didn't like I Love Lucy. I hated Lucy. But I would always watch her. Why? Because every funny scene was about a disaster. And it always bothered me. You know, it always bothered me. In other words, she'd be painting something, but basically the paint is falling on her head, and she's losing a tremendous amount of money. And that's really comedy. That's really funny. But you know what? As a kid, I thought, I felt really bad. You know, or there was the one episode where she was baking a bread, and she put too much in, and then the bread stuck out of the oven and started attacking her, you know, and then she was pinned against the wall by the bread, and everyone's laughing. Of course, they've got that laugh machine. You know, and I was sitting there feeling so bad for her. Who's going to save her? I love Lucy, and I don't want her to die by being attacked by a big French bun, you know? And so I was very, very nervous about the whole thing. And so really, comedy is taking a crisis and laughing about it. But very often, that becomes the mode of life. We take crises and make it into a joke, rather than make it into a growth possibility and get moving. And so, lischok osim, they make jokes out of this whole thing. They see the house coming apart, and they make a whole comedy skit out of the whole thing. And what do they say? Lechem. And I think this is really what he means, because it's a statement. Lechem v'yayin yismach chayim. Just learn how to say that. Wine and bread will make life happy. Lechem v'yayin yismach chayim. I think it's really a little, you know, a little rhyme that he's saying that people say. He says, "Laschok osim." They make jokes out of everything. And what do they say? In, you know, put quotations. Lechem v'yayin yismach chayim. It's bread and wine that will make life happy. V'hakesef. And what a statement. V'hakesef yaneh et hakol. And money will answer everything. And what a strong statement. V'kesef yaneh et hakol. The answer to all my problems is money. And that is so stupid. But I want you to know, I know so many people that live their life that way. And I lived my life that way too. Because, you know, when people are making decisions from high school to college, and you ask them what they want to do, they say, I don't know what I want to do. Well, what do you want to be? I don't know what I want to be, but I know I got to make money. I know I want to make money. And that was the way I kind of lived my life. I assumed, I don't know what life's all about, but one thing I know, whatever it's all about, you need money. And that'll, whatever it is that I'm supposed to do with my life, it's that which will enable me to do that which I have to do with my life. And it's not true, because the best things in life are free. Okay? And that's really true. God gave the Torah to the Jewish people for free, and that's what it is. It was a gift. And relationships, it's not money that buys relationships. It's not money that makes relationships. In fact, very often, unfortunately, it's money that destroys relationships. It's when they have to merge their bank accounts is when they begin to realize that this is not a marriage. You know, I find it remarkable, but people, they're married, and this one has their bank account, this one has their bank account. Nobody knows where what's coming in, who did this. It's a remarkable idea. But people think, you know, money, that if I got the money, then whatever problem I'll have, whatever crisis I'll have, that will deal with it. And everybody knows it's simply not true, but we know it. but we don't realize it. Because if we realized it, it's like, how many times a person say to me that, gee, I'd like to continue learning, but I gotta get back to life. I gotta start a job. It's the strangest thing. You know, I wanna get started with my life, which equals career, which equals putting financial stability into my account. Do you think that's when life started? I had one of my students tell me after learning it for a couple of weeks, saying to me, well, you know, I got to go back because I want to get started with my life. Oh, you mean, in other words, while you were here at Israel Life, life hadn't started yet. Okay? What were we doing all these last 6 weeks? What exactly were we doing? I got to get started with life. I mean, this has been really fun, but what's this have to do with life equal money? You know? What does it have to do with money? What does it have to do with financial stability? I don't see what it is. And this is the strangest and the saddest thing, because he says, then what do people, they make a joke out of everything, and they say, money will answer everything. Okay? You got a problem? Money. It's the one word. Alright? And of course, Judaism says, you got a problem? It's God. Bring God into your life. Right, bring God in and get that light from beyond the sun. Okay, get that light beyond the sun. Because in the sun, that silver dollar is so shiny, is so glimmering. All those golden coins, that's all in the light of the sun. But in the light of God, it doesn't have any value at all. Unless you do something with it and do something right with it. And so, quite frankly, it's unbelievable how much time people spend in learning how to make a living when they don't even know what living's all about in the first place. And they're learning how to make a living. How do you make a living? You're already alive. You don't have to make a living. Okay? But we've assumed that money is making a living. Who says? Some of the poorest people I've met are so rich. You know, there's a friend of mine who made Aliyah, lives here. His friend wrote him these letters. How are you surviving there? How can you make it there? It's so difficult. You know, and this is what he wrote him. He said, I have never made so little money in my life and felt so rich. And I'm telling you, that's how I feel in the land of Israel. I feel so, Baruch Hashem, rich living in the land of Israel. You know, raising my children in this environment than the environments that I could have been in. And I could have been making a lot more money. A lot more money if I wanted to. I'd probably make better money if I would have gone into comedy. But anyways, rabbis. What? Well, that goes without saying. I could have been the greatest great breakdancing rabbi in the world, but I gave it up for holiness. Verse 20. Gam bimadacha, melech al tekala. Even in your mind, don't curse the king. Ubechadre mishkafacha al tekala ashir. And even in your deepest little bedroom where nobody hears, don't curse the rich. Now, some commentaries say, of course, the king is God. And the rich are the Torah scholars. Why are they rich? Because Torah is true wealth. Right? Torah is true wealth. And therefore, don't, in your mind, even if you think nobody hears it, it's just my mind. He says, he cautions. A word to the wise, once again from King Solomon. That even your mind don't curse Hashem. You know? And even in your most back, don't curse the Torah scholars. Why? Ki of Hashemayim yolich etakol. Because a bird of heaven will bring the voice. Now what does that mean? The little birdie told me so, that kind of thing? Well, one way of reading this, the commentary say, is what is this of Hashemayim? What is this bird of heaven? It's your soul. Your soul is a bird of heaven. It's flying after this world into the next world. And so if in your mind you curse God, and if in your mind, you know, or in your hiddenness you curse the Torah scholars, then your own soul will deliver the message to God. In other words, once again, who's the informer? Who are you running away from? Yourself, you can't. You might be able to hide from everybody else, but you can't hide from yourself. And your inner self is your soul. And your inner self will make this known to the king, so to speak. Ubala knafayim, and he of wings, hinting to the angels, yagid devar, will tell the matter over. Which might also mean that when I leave this world, my soul will carry the words that I thought, and the angel that will accompany my soul to the next world will remind me what I said in my mind. And therefore, once again, the wise man knows not only to be careful of what he says to others, but also what he thinks to himself. Because not only what you say to others will damage others, and not only what you say to others will ultimately really damage yourself, but even what you think will damage yourself. And so you always want to reserve judgment. Yes, there's no question that in Judaism there are many times that you see people angry with Hashem, arguing with Hashem, questioning His ways. And you can do that, but you never curse Hashem. You just never do that. You just never do that. Because that is the danger zone. Okay? And so yes, King Solomon praises wisdom. He praises wisdom. He cautions us against foolishness. He tells us what the various criteria of what true wisdom is and how it is the sign of true authenticity, and authenticity can never be faked off. And he tells us that not only does the wise man know what he says and only says what he knows, but the wise man also knows what he shouldn't say and what he shouldn't think. What do you think of King Solomon? Isn't he great? Could you imagine? This was here in our tradition all along, and we've been reading all these therapy books.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelite.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990, or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.